This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal. Odoo. Modern management made simple.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letzen. This month, we're trying something a little new on the podcast. Instead of putting out a whole hour of stories at a time, we're actually going to give you one story a week, every Tuesday. Let us know what you think of the change. Tweet us at Reveal or share your thoughts on our Facebook page. Today, we're giving you an encore presentation of a story that aired on the show back in February. Since it first went out, there have been some pretty surprising developments. We'll get to those a little later, but first, here's the original piece so you know the background. When it comes to the CIA's use of enhanced interrogation, there's still a lot of unfinished business. Just this past December, the Senate Intelligence Committee released a report that stirred up a lot of conversation in the public and in Congress.
The CIA's actions a decade ago are a stain on our value and on our history. The release of this 500-page summary cannot remove that stain.
This particular release, in my judgment, serves no purpose whatsoever other than to endanger Americans around the world.
Here's the thing. It wasn't just the CIA. The U.S. military also used similar techniques in Afghanistan and Iraq. And come on, let's be real here. When I say techniques, what we are really talking about is torture. We know a lot more about torture, not just because of the Senate report, but from a host of whistleblowers, including Alberto Mora. He was the Navy's top lawyer during the Bush administration.
If we're to say that we're a country that uses torture and uses cruelty, then we're not the country we were founded as, and we're not the country we're meant to be.
Reporter Joshua Phillips spent years investigating a group of Army soldiers who came home deeply troubled by some of the things they did to Iraqi prisoners. Phillips was drawn to one man in particular, a combat medic with lots of secrets. Here's Josh.
Before you continue, just spell your name for me so I have it.
J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N. Last name is Malance, M-I-L-L. A-N-T-Z.
The first time I spoke with Jonathan Lance was this phone call in 2006. The war in Iraq had been going on for 3 years, and John was a combat medic there during some of the worst fighting. But now he was back home on a medical discharge.
Let's see here. I don't care if you use my name, but I'm not going to release any other information about anybody else's name or anything like that.
Okay.
He was offering to help me report on soldiers who had tried but failed to blow the whistle on abuses by U.S. troops in Iraq. John told me violent interrogations, cruelty, and torture weren't limited to the CIA or at Abu Ghraib prison. He described a remote place in Iraq that the public didn't know about, a small army base where captured Iraqis were beaten, kept sleepless, and chained to bars for days.
My job was actually to check their vital signs and make sure that we're not killing them.
I wanted to know more, but it was tough to get details. John would reach out to me, then disappear for months. When I caught him on the phone, he could be evasive. He finally agreed to sit down for an interview at his mother's house in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. John told me about his deployment to the Sunni Triangle, the turbulent region north of Baghdad. He was attached to a tank battalion, part of the 4th Infantry Division. But with American troops being targeted and killed by the insurgents, the men left their tanks and fought a different kind of war. They raided homes, hauling captured Iraqi men back to a forward operating base.
there was already a jail there, sliding doors and all that good stuff. I don't know if it was something from Saddam's regime that he had put there or whatever, but there was about six cells on each side.
Next to the jail were the interrogation booths. John told me detainees were beaten and tormented there before and during questioning. Sometimes troops abused prisoners out of anger and frustration with the war.
Some of the guys in the jail, I remember some of the Iraqi stories, they're like, why am I even here? You know, I got arrested. I'm just a farmer trying to make a living, and they're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I can only imagine getting interrogated for so long, for weeks, and they're just thinking, what the hell? I mean, I didn't even do anything. I don't even know. I'm sure some of these guys are probably even making up stuff to say because they really didn't know.
The majority of people that we captured and tortured were completely innocent. That seems to keep getting lost in the defense of these techniques that were used and things like that.
Eli Wright met John in basic training. He's one of about a dozen soldiers I've interviewed who've served alongside John or at a nearby base and who witnessed prisoner abuse. Like John, Wright was a combat medic who treated Iraqi men after brutal interrogations.
As a medic, I guess I enlisted with some pretty high ideals. So to be put in a situation where I was involved in, you know, being party to hurting others, which is, of course, what happens in war, but to do it in the way that we were doing it in those holding cells, it really shattered my worldview.
John also seemed shattered by powerful feelings of guilt.
It's been really hard over the years coming to terms with what actually happened over there. And, you know.
I remember this moment in one of our interviews. John is sitting uneasily in a hotel room. As he struggles for words, his fingers slowly tear apart a styrofoam coffee cup.
Just, all right, feeling comfortable even talking about it with myself or another veteran or someone who's there. Because from my point of view, keeping a person alive while these so-called interrogation techniques are going on, it definitely burns an image to your brain that you'll never forget.
One day, John handed me a snapshot. In the photo, John is posing with an army lieutenant in the jail back in Iraq where they question detainees. Standing in the foreground is an Iraqi man wincing in pain. John shared this picture to prove abuse and torture really happened and that officers were present and oversaw it. But the photo reveals something else. Both men standing next to the prisoner are smiling. John's smile is a little goofy, but he also seems to be raising his fist over the man's head. Turns out, John wasn't just treating prisoners at the jail. He also took part in the abuse. Recently, I showed John's photo to his friend Eli Wright. It was the first time he had seen the image.
You can see in the picture, if you look closely enough, that the detainee is sweating through.
Oh, he's completely covered in sweat, yeah. He's soaked through. You can barely see any dry spots on his clothing.
The Iraqi prisoner is holding a heavy wooden board in his hands. John had told me the prisoner was forced to hold the board so long that his wrist broke.
It's really hard to see him in that photo because that's not the Johnny I knew, and that's not the way that he was before he went to war, for sure. You know, like many of us, it brought out a dark side that we all have within us and allowed it to run completely free with no restraint. You know, for me, seeing this officer standing there, that's where it feels like a major betrayal, that we were led into this by people who gave a green light to just go ahead with whatever crazy stuff they would invent and come up with. Obviously speaks to, again, one of those disconnects that often is portrayed on these incidents, that these are, you know, young, bad apple soldiers.
When I asked John about his role in the abuse, he told me this.
I think any human being in that sort of situation would have done the same thing.
But he also told me he tried to speak out about the abuses in the jail.
So I'm not going to say any names, but I voiced my opinion many a times to officers in the units and NCOs. It was beat into our brains the entire time we were there. This is a company level operation. Do not talk about it. Do not tell anybody about this because they knew exactly what the hell they were doing.
Another one of John's friends, Michael Blake, says John told him about trying to report the abuse to his superiors. Blake also served in the 4th Infantry Division and was stationed nearby.
He said they tried to take it to the first line supervisor, the platoon sergeant, went all the way up to the CO, and nobody would listen to him or do anything about it.
It's not easy to be a whistleblower in the U.S. military.
John Sifton of Human Rights Watch has widely investigated brutal interrogations and detainee abuse by the U.S. military. He says John Melance's story is one piece in a broad pattern of U.S. torture and how American forces got away with it.
In Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, most people who were investigated got off with a slap on the wrist or nothing.
John Melance and his friends would often make that point to me. Low-ranking soldiers have taken most of the blame.
I mean, the most egregious thing is not so much that the soldiers were not held accountable, but that the accountability didn't go up the chain of command to the people who made the decisions that led to the abuse in the first place.
After he returned from Iraq, John was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. He was open with me about that. And like other members of his unit, he was dealing with substance abuse, prescription, and street drugs. He was also haunted by a member of his unit who attempted suicide and then died of a drug overdose. That soldier had told his friends and family that he was troubled by the prisoner abuse and torture.
Hello?
John.
Yeah.
How are you, man? It's Josh Collins.
For a time, it looked like John was coping.
Rehab for about 3 months.
He was living at home, getting counseling, and had a new girlfriend.
I consider myself very fortunate. I had friends commit suicide when I got back. I know people who had to have guns pulled out of their mouth. I know people who can't get out of bed every day without being on 15 different types of medication at the VA.
He also found a way to channel his anger and frustration about Iraq. He joined the anti-war movement.
I was in a big protest in Manhattan. There was about 60,000 people behind us, and I was leading a march, and a guy from American Legion came up and called me a traitor. And I guess I can understand where he's coming from, but he didn't see the same thing I saw.
But drugs caught up with him. Days after one of our interviews, John almost died from an overdose of Xanax. I didn't know it at the time. His sister Rosalind says he was in anguish when she saw him in the hospital.
He would mumble things to me when he was in and out of consciousness in the hospital after taking numerous pills. He would mumble things to me like, I tried so hard, Rosalind, to fix what I did. And I'd be like, Jonathan, what are you talking about? And he'd be like, the tortures, the jails.
John's friends wondered if it was a suicide attempt. No one knew for sure.
Hey, Josh, what's up? This is Johnny. I'm doing really good, really good. Just coming back from a counseling group. Give me a call at my house whenever you want to. I'll talk to you. Okay, bye.
This message was one of the last times I heard from John. Looking back, I never fully knew the depths of his depression, but John's sister Rosalind saw it close up.
He just felt alone and isolated and felt that he didn't deserve help. He thought he needed to be put to death in one way or another for his actions over in Iraq.
Jonathan Melance died at his home in Greensburg 3 years after her first phone call. The coroner found it was acute combined drug toxicity from a mix of prescription drugs. On a recent blustery winter evening, I visited John's friend, Eli Wright, at an art studio in Branchburg, New Jersey. He's been working with a veterans art collective called the Combat Paper Project. They beat military uniforms into pulp for handmade paper.
So what are you doing here?
Just emptying out the beater, putting the pulp into a bucket, and then from here it's going to go into the vat where I pull the sheets from. Well, I think he has an important story to tell, and he's not here to tell it anymore, and so it's up to the few of us left that he had an impact on to keep him alive through telling his story.
Wright is crafting the paper into three masks. One represents himself, another the prisoners he encountered in Iraq. The third mask is John.
It's not intended to be a literal representation or portrait of just Johnny himself. It's representative of a broader range of people who have seen things and experienced things that they weren't able to reconcile.
In two of the masks, the faces are blindfolded. For John's, the eyes are wide open.
Often there's things that we wish we could unsee, and I've got sort of an idea in mind of sewing his eyes open so that he's unable to look away. He's unable to unsee the things that were in front of him.
Wright stares at the mask. He reflects on the damage that torture inflicted on his friend and on him. It's a legacy that Wright still reckons with today. It's one that he can't unsee either.
Joshua Phillips has tried repeatedly over the past 8 years to get the military to respond to soldiers' accounts of torture, allegations that officers knew what was going on, and that they stifled complaints from men like John Melance, but they came back with nothing. This January, we tried again. We sent them the photo that shows John Melance and an Army officer with an Iraqi prisoner. Just before broadcast, the Army finally did get back to us. They said there's no record of any investigation into the alleged abuse. They said it would be impossible to search their database for complaints of abuse without knowing the detainee's name or the military-issued serial number. But here's the thing. We don't have that information. They do. Then, last month, we released our story and a copy of the photo of that Iraqi prisoner drenched in sweat and grimacing in pain. It caught the eye of the U.S. Army. After our broadcast, they opened an investigation into possible war crimes. Joining me to talk about these developments is our reporter, Joshua Phillips. So this photo we've got two soldiers here with a detainee who's clearly in distress. Why is this photo a big deal?
Well, for one thing, this photograph shows what Jonathan Melance and other of his fellow soldiers had alleged, that they were involved in prisoner abuse and torture, and that there were officers that were present. So this photograph shows Jonathan Melance and a lieutenant beside him. And in the foreground, there's a detainee who's sweating profusely, and his face is strained in pain as he's holding up this heavy wooden board.
So how did the snapshot make it all the way from Iraq to the USA and then into your hands?
Right. So these photographs are actually very rare. You know, since the Abu Ghraib prison abuse scandal of 2004, there really haven't been any publicly disclosed photographs that feature U.S. forces engaging in detainee abuse and torture. In Melance's case, he took his photographs and he sent them back home with letters to his friend John Hutton. John Hutton basically kept the photographs and the letters for John in his home and ensured that no one saw them.
So you actually sat down with John Hutton, and he went through the letters with you. Let's hear some tape of that.
We put sandbags over their heads and broke their thumbs by accident, of course. He was talking about how they burned them with cigarettes and waking them up all hours of the night. I mean, at the time, I'm sure everybody was doing it, and you know, they were having a good time and messing around with these prisoners. But I think once he got back into reality and just laying there at nights thinking about it or whatever, yeah, I think it got to him.
So was that the only photo?
John Melance told me that he took many other photographs of detainee abuse and torture, and his friends and family saw some of these pictures, and they even described them to me. Family members of his described pictures in which there were detainees that were chained to bars and hanging from bars. There were soldiers that were pointing guns at detainees' heads in this very menacing way, things like that. But the family grew very distressed when they saw these photographs. They feared that it would force John to revisit wartime trauma, and so they threw them away. And so, as far as I know, this is the only photograph of his that survived.
Now, Josh, for several years now, you've taken this information to the military brass about what's going on. I mean, you even tracked down the officer in the photo, Lieutenant Philip Blanchard. He's now a captain in the National Guard, but until recently, nothing happened.
Yes. It really surprised me that after a dozen times contacting the military, since 2008, inquiring if there had been any investigations into these allegations of detainee abuse and torture. They never got back to us with any information. It was only when we published this photograph that they seemed to take serious interest and then say they were going to take action.
Okay, so now that there's an Army investigation, what do you think will happen? I mean, how do you think this will turn out given other cases in the past?
It's very unusual that they're reopening this case, and it's very hard to speculate about what might actually happen. In the case of the Abu Ghraib perpetrators, they served relatively longer sentences, but for the most part, most of the punishment for prisoner abuse and torture has been fairly light for military service members.
Joshua Phillips, we will keep our eyes on these developments. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This story was produced by Michael Montgomery. While this episode is wrapped, our reporters are always uncovering new stories. You can find them at revealnews.org, like about how your rice might have arsenic in it and tips on how to avoid it. For example, you might want to think about switching from brown rice to white. We also want to hear from you. Let us know what you thought of the show. Tweet us at Reveal or find us on Facebook. Our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan, and Suzanne Reber is our executive editor. Our editorial director is Robert Saliday, and our managing director is Krista Scharfenberg. Our lead sound designer and engineer is Jim Briggs, Mr. J. Breezy. Our theme music is provided by Ezekiel Honig. You can find his music at EzekielHonig.com. That's H-O-N-I-G.com. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Edson, and remember, there is always more to the story.
Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal. Odoo, modern management made simple.